Hi, how are you?
I can't. I'm great. I'll be going to the Nissim concert tonight. Shame I can't come to the class.
Okay, who's concert?
Nissim Black.
Oh, okay. Great.
Yeah, he's doing the whole thing for JLE and whatnot.
JLE, so. Great. Where is it going to be?
Palm Beach Shemesh.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Buff about to leave.
Okay, have a really good time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mufush Lema.
Thank you.
Yes.
What is it leaving?
It's just a little, it's always a balance. It's a little less intimate, a little more room. So it's always hard to know. It's more professorial here, but okay. So one thing I pick up, I see the Alter Rebbe has a certain minhag, a stylistic minhag. I'm not sure, well, who am I to judge? It's not the way I would write things, and that is, I think he deliberately wants to keep you reading. So he'll often say something in one perek without explaining it at all, and not even alluding to the fact that he's going to explain it later. And you're sitting there and you're wondering, what does it mean? And then, like in the next perek or two perekim later, he goes back, which means, actually, Tanya is one of the svarim that you have to remember everything that came before. You know, that's a little frustrating, because, you know, we learn things, and unfortunately we forget things, and we hope that every perek is a self-contained unit, and that makes it easier. So even if I don't remember last week, you know, I have this week. Unfortunately, the Alter Rebbe wrote it in such a way that things are very, very interrelated. So you do have to remember it, of course. That was probably his kavanah, that he wanted people to remember the Sefer, apply it to real life. So last week we did Perek Tesvav. So today, what we're going to try to do, hopefully, because the Prakim are short, is I'm going to go over some parts of Tesvav again, and then hopefully we'll do Tesayin and Yudzayin, which are relatively short, and they're very interrelated. So these three Prakim, Tesvav, Tesayin, Yudzayin, are really one unit. And again, as I say, they are relatively short Prakim. If you remember, so again, we have to chazer a little bit, that in Perek Tesvav, the Alter Rebbe introduced, we're already talking about the Beinoni. We're not talking about Tzadikim. We're not talking about Rishayim. We're talking about Beinonim. And the Alter Rebbe's definition of a Beinoni is a person who does not sin, either with Dibor, with Maisa, or even with Machshava. He does not sin. And when he does sin, so temporarily he's a Rasha, but Beinoni is at least a Madrega that every person could aspire to. So the Beinoni, so all of us are Beinonim in the sense that all of us are potential Beinonim. We may not be Beinonim at any given moment, but Beinoni is fact, going back to the pasuk, if you remember, the Tanya is based on the pasuk, Ki karo ve'lecha hadavar ma'od. It is very near to you. It is very accessible to you. To serve Hashem, the Alter Rebbe says, that means it is within the power of every person to be a Beinoni. It doesn't mean you are a Beinoni, because even if you commit one Aveira, for that moment you are a Rasha, but the Rasha can become a Beinoni. So now, the difference is that Tzaddik no longer struggles with the evil. He's converted the evil into a positive force. The Beinoni still has in the left ventricle of the heart the animal soul that is attached to evil or egotism or taiva, but he could be misgaber, hamoach, sholeit avalev. The moach can control those taivas. Yeah,
sorry, Tzaddik is essentially an angel?
Yeah, but again, we need a separate book about Tzaddikim, which the Alter Rebbe may have written according to Mesorah, but it was burnt, so we can't fully discuss Tzaddikim. But Beinonim is what we're supposed to become. Yeah.
The difference between a Tzaddik, Sheina Gomer, and a Beinoni, is that clear?
That is not entirely clear. It seems that the Getter is like this. I mean, I can describe it physically, but I can't automatically make ultimate sense of it. And that is, he says like this. He says, the Beinoni, the Cholol Hasmali, the left ventricle, is still filled with all of the Taiva Fara. There is no spillover into the left ventricle. A Tzaddik Sheino Gomer, there is a spillover, and the Ra is Nispatel, but it hasn't been converted. That's the physical description of the process.
But it's
hard for us to fully understand the difference. There's one is a difference that a Tzaddik Gomer, there is no Ra. A Tzaddik Sheino Gomer, there's a Beetel Hara. A Beinoni, the Ra is there betokfo, but you don't let it gain control of the Yer Katana. The Yer Katana is the Machshava Dibur Maisa of the person. So it's as if the enemy is still there, but you don't let the enemy come to this camp. The Tzaddik Sheino Gomer, you've managed to infiltrate the enemy, and the enemy is Botel, but it's still present there. Tzaddik Gomer, the enemy is totally, totally vanquished.
Yeah. I might have understood it wrong. Is it wrong to say that by Beinoni, the difference is that the Hevet Bahamas speaks up, whereas in the Tzaddik Sheino Gomer, it doesn't speak? It just is there, but it doesn't speak? He's not actively?
Well, it's hard to say. It's not going to be Payal actively, because it's Batel. It's Batel, either Batel B'Shishim, Batel B'Elef. But apparently it has some potential effect there, because it's not dead. And it could theoretically be aroused in a negative way. By the way, I just want to point out that although the Alter Rebbe's Shita is that there's no guarantee that every person could be a tzaddik. A tzaddik depends either a gift from Hashem or you're born with a certain neshama. It's equally true that, and this is an amazing thing, even a person born with the neshama of a tzaddik may actually be a Rasha B'Payo, because they're still Bechira. A tzaddik, in the sense that you're born as a tzaddik, doesn't mean you're born that you will for sure be a tzaddik. It simply means you're born with the potential that you could be a tzaddik. And theoretically, that person could be mamash, a Rasha Gomer, chas v'shalom. Just like, I mean, for sure it's this way, every person could be a Beinoni, but it's shayach to be a Rasha. So even by a tzaddik, it's shayach to be a Rasha, but he has the potential to kill that enemy. Okay. Now, yeah.
When the Tanya started to eat tzaddik about to be Rasha.
Yeah.
Was he just referring to doing the right thing, but not necessarily the title?
So he explained it like this. He didn't quite say that. He explained it to say, to eat tzaddik means be mishtadel to become a tzaddik. Maybe you'll make it. Maybe you won't. And even if you don't make it, at least don't be a Rasha. That's how he interpreted it. And that's why you have to make both oaths, because most people are not going to become tzaddikim. So memela, they have to take a second shvua that l'chol apachos they will be beinonim. Now, the second part, one of the complications in the Tanya is, in fact, you'll even see it tonight, that he doesn't always, the Alter Rebbe sometimes uses tzaddik for Russia the same way everybody else uses it. Meaning, when even though he did say that even a single Aveira makes you a Rasha, there are going to be times in the Tanya that when he says Rasha, he doesn't mean that. He means a real, real, real bad person. So one of the complications here is that because of Kaiser Datenu, again, the other Rebbe, I'm sure, would have a teretz for everything, the terminologies are not always 100% consistent. That sometimes the word Russia means a very, very bad person, and sometimes a Russia means the technical state, that even one Avera can make you a Russia in the eyes of God. So we'll see. I'll try to point out in context when it's clear that he's not using Russia in his definitional way. But you have to be careful. Bechlal, terminology are not always consistent. For example, when you see a phrase in the Gemara, liosid lavo, liosid lavo, liosid lavo can sometimes mean Moshiach, it can sometimes mean Olam Haba, it can sometimes mean Techiyas HaMeis. I mean, if you ask somebody, what is the definition of a term like liosid lavo, the short answer is it does not have a fixed definition. It depends on how Chazal are using it at any given time. Yeah, Ellie.
Sorry, can we have a somewhat more, is it possible to propose a somewhat more flexible definition of tzaddik, Russia being tzaddik, in the sense that, I don't know, you could be a Russia in one aspect of your avodah and a tzaddik in another and a beinoni in another. Do we have to be labeling people seen as a whole? Or can we just label various different aspects of one avodah?
Well, you know, you can do whatever you want, meaning to say that is a legitimate use of the term tzaddik in Russia. A person, for example, could be very, very great in one particular aspect of Avodas Hashem and be very, very defective in the other. The only thing is, that's not the Baal HaTanya's use of the term, that's all. I don't think you could say what you're saying in his definition of the term, but it would be shaykh. Yeah.
So I'm hearing all these definitions and also keeping in mind like the idea that like, you know, Midat Rachamim only exists here and then in the Beit Din Shamala is pure justice.
Yeah.
So where does the idea that Hashem takes into account every person's level and where they grew up and the time and history that they're growing up, where does that get added into the mix?
Well,
and
yeah,
how important is that in influencing a judgment?
Yeah, again, there are some ideas that Balei Musar and Balei Hashkafa have developed that are not necessarily going to be found in every Sefer. Here, if you look at Rav Dessler, for example, Dessler actually was very influenced by Tanya, but he also had many chidushim of his own. So Rav Dessler points out a very, very important idea in Bechira. Everybody has free will, of course, but what Hashem expects of you at any given time may not be the same thing. So everybody has always a choice to be made. So for example, if somebody is a drug addict who's lying in the mud, Hashem is not going to say to him, oh, why aren't you in the Panovich Kolo? And you're going to be punished because you're not in the Panovich Kolo.
Surely he still has an Avera for...
No, that's right. So the point basically is, his responsibility was not to be in Kolel. His responsibility was to seek treatment for an addiction.
So
meaning,
his responsibility essentially is to still be a Russian.
Huh? It's understood that sometimes your choice is between worse and less worse.
Okay.
That's exactly right. That's a very realistic point. Now again, that doesn't quite fit the Baal HaTanya, but therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges you not based on your failure to make the best choice, but on your failure to make a choice that was not as bad as where you are.
The best available to you at the time.
Right, and that's understood. And that's going to change. That's going to change as you go on. This is a critical point called Nekudas HaBechira. Nekudas HaBechira means everybody has a choice, but where on the spectrum that choice is going to vary from individual to individual. Now that actually does fit one point of the Tanya, because if you remember, the Tanya spoke, I mean, I'm going to go over this again, that one of the things is that even a Beinoni may not be an Eved Hashem, even though he's doing everything perfect, if he's simply acting out of habit, and he's not challenging himself, and not going on beyond your comfort zone. So I'm a perfect Beinoni, which we would call perfect tzaddik. I don't sin with my thought, I don't sin with my speech, I don't sin with my action, but I'm just doing, you know, I'm just coasting, I'm just sitting on my laurels. And the thing that Rav Dessler would describe it is that what's already accomplished is no longer your main avoda. Your main avoda is to find a new area to challenge yourself, to go beyond your comfort zone. If all you're doing is coasting, So I'm getting ahead of myself. So let me go now. So in Perek Tetzvav, we now introduce two categories of Beinoni. So we have the Beinoni. The Beinoni is somebody who indeed is not sinning with Machshava Dibor Maisa. But he quotes the Pasuk in Malachi, the last of the prophets, the Haftarah for Shabbos HaGadol, that says, you will see on the day of judgment the Tzaddik, the Rasha, the Oved Elokim, the one that serves God and the one that does not serve God. So the Baal HaTanya points out that can't just mean Tzaddik and Rasha, because that's already said. Why are you repeating it? So he learns this way. There's Tzaddikim, there's Rashayim, and then in the world of the Beinoni, we have two types of Beinoni. There's the Beinoni that is the Oved Elokim, and there is the Beinoni that's not the Oved Elokim. And the Baal HaTanya points out, again, if we're talking about a Beinoni, by definition we're talking about somebody who is not sinning with Dibor, Machshava, and Maisa. So within that world of Beinoni, what is the difference between the Oved Elokim and not Oved? So he makes the point like this. The Baal HaTanya makes the point, again, I'm chazering from last week, that the only time you're called an Oved Elokim is if you have to fight the powerful force coming from the animal soul and your miskaber. Now there are going to be times that you're doing good not because you're able to conquer your evil, but you're doing good because your yetzer hara does not focus in that particular direction. So he mentions, for example, some people like to study. They like to learn. It's something that's enjoyable to them naturally. They're doing a wonderful thing. They're going to get the reward for Talmud Torah, no question. But that's not called Avodas Hashem, because it does not involve struggling against what's natural to them. So they're not fighting against the Yetzer Hara. Legabe that prat, they don't have a Yetzer Hara so much. It's just what they like to do. Or, he talks about people who are less passionate, they have less libido, they have less sexual arousal. So if they're not nichshel in arayas or hirurim, that's not because they worked on it. That's just because this is not their yetzer hara. They have another yetzer hara. So he says that you're still a beinoni. You're still doing good things, very very good things, but you're not called an oved elokim. And that's what he compared it to, the idea of eino dome. The Gemara darshens on who is an oved elokim. The difference between somebody who reviews 100 times and somebody only who reviews 101. Yeah, this makes sense. A person who reviews 100 times, the Gemara says, is not Oved Elokim. Why not? So the Baal HaTanya says, he offers a nice historical comment, that in the days before Torah Shebaal Peh was written down, people had to memorize quite a lot. So learning 100 times was a normal thing. Today, it would be, perhaps today 100 would count like 101 or more. But in those days, 100 was standard. So you're doing standard procedure that everybody does? That's not avoda. Yeah.
Rabbi Wiener was talking about earlier this week a concept where for Musar, you supposedly meant to start off with your strongest characteristic, and that in turn will help you attain all of the other good characteristics.
Yes.
But it seems kind of counterproductive with what you said, where you get the least credit for the thing you're good at. So it wouldn't make sense to start off with your worst characteristic and then build that up.
Yeah, that's a very good question. But I think Lamaisa, both things are true at the same time. Meaning to say, you start with what you're good at, because that builds you, that builds up your stamina, that builds up your endurance, that builds up your confidence, that builds up your hope that you'll be able to achieve significant goals. So your real reward, just like I say with exercise, where they say, yeah, if you exercise for 30 minutes, the real benefit comes the last 5 minutes. But you need the 25 minutes to be able to do the last 5 minutes. So it's a very similar thing. The real reward is going to be that extra mile. But in order to do the marathon, I'm switching Mishalom now, you got to practice with a lot of shorter sprints that are easier for you. So I do think psychologically it is MS that you have to start with your strongest points, because that will build you up. But Einachinami, the Iker Sechar, is going to be on that which you have to struggle. Right? That's called Avoda. Now, in that sense, that's why he says the 101 is going beyond your comfort zone. Now, he also brought the Gemara that says there was a certain donkey driver that he charged you X amount of money for a for 10 mil. And if you did 11 mil, he charged you double. One extra mil. In other words, it's like saying $10 for 10 miles, $20 for 11 miles. So why would the last mile... Sure, if I'm saying something wrong here, but okay. You never know. Yeah, why would the... Just wonder how the dogs take it here. Just, okay, let's go crazy. Yeah, why would the last mile, so to speak, be equal in value to the preceding 10 miles? The answer is because the 10 miles was the normal route. To go beyond the norm is a very, very special thing. Now, I just want to point out, I wasn't diamond on this, but you had asked me, I want to point out that the Alter Rebbe mentions two situations where even though you're a Beinoni, you're not an Oved Elokim. He doesn't mean it's sinful, but you know, you're not reaching the level of an Oved Hashem. One is when you're simply doing the things for which you don't have a challenge. And the other is, he says, even if initially there was a challenge, but there's something called, a very famous principle, Hergel Nasa Teva, right? Habituation becomes your second nature. So, in a sense, you've graduated yourself into a situation where this is no longer an avoda, even though originally it was. In other words, when it becomes too easy, you got to look for a reasonable challenge, but some type of challenge. Now, he mentions something I want to talk about here, because he doesn't explain. Now, if you just read this perek, you literally don't know what he's talking about. First of all, he says the following. This is in Perek Tesvav. He says that within every Jewish soul, every Jewish heart, there is something that is called an Ava Misuteres. Ava Misuteres literally means a concealed love of God. There is a love of God in your heart. This would mean in your right ventricle, where the godly, in other words, the moach is connected to the right ventricle. That's the godly soul is in the moach, but it's nispashet to the lev. But there is what is called an inborn ava, which you may not be aware of, that is called misuteres, concealed. And that is why Bnei Yisrael are called Ohavei Shemecha. We love the name, we love God, so to speak. Everybody. Even if you're not religious, even if you don't believe, think you don't believe in God, you are in B'Esem, Ohavei Shemecha. And that Ohavei Shemecha is like an inertia force that actually does propel you to do mitzvos, but it can be overwhelmed by the ra. So consequently, when your Yetzer Hara is not, that's what he's saying, when your Yetzer Hara is not pushing you in another way, and you're doing good, you're doing good because of the Ava Misuteres in your heart. But since that's the Yerusha from the Avos, you don't get any credit for that. That's not called Oved Hashem. You see? Because it's like, if there's no Ra pushing me away from this, then it's just kind of almost the inertial force of the Ava Misuteres that's going to pull, you know, roll me, so to speak, towards good. Now, again, he absolutely does not explain this at all. He just literally has one little phrase. It is explained in later prakim. So he's kind of dropping something that you're going to have to read on to understand. This idea that a certain love, now this is a subconscious, non-awareness love, whatever that means exactly, in the chalal hayamini of the lev, and that is said to be a Yerusha from the Avos. This itself is a peculiar idea, although it's not unique with the Balatanya, that emotional and spiritual feelings, like love and fear, can be passed down, be Yerusha. Again, a scientist would deny such a thing. A scientist says, your genes only have, you know, physical characteristics. They don't have these spiritual ideas, and yet we find very, very often in Chazal and other Svarim that certain midos are mushrash within us from the Avos. Now, I don't understand myself why does the Bala Tanya have to say that? Why don't you just say it's the teva of the godly soul to have an Ava for HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I mean, that would be logical. Not because of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. It's the teva of the godly soul to be nimshach to Hashem. So why Klor, the Alter Rebbe, feels he has to connect the Ava Misuteres to a Yerusha from the Avos is not totally clear to me. But nevertheless, he points out that what you do because of the Ava Misuteres is simply your good nature pushing you to something in which there's no countervailing bad nature in the other direction. So that's not called your avoda. That is simply instinct. Like an animal could have an instinct. And therefore, you are called not an oved Hashem. Right? So what Perek Tesvav does is, it subdivides the world of the Beinoni, the world of the Beinoni, between the oved Hashem and Asher lo avado. Yeah?
If that part of us, at the heart, is the good part, or the part where Hashem, where we're meant to be doing good from the heart, where does the Yetzer Hara come from? Which part of us,
He divides the heart. He says the left ventricle is the animal soul, which has the ra, and the right ventricle has the positive ava misuteris. Yeah, that's what he says. He literally divides the heart. Yeah.
So, if I may, just like to offer a thought onto why the Bala Tanya may described it in a way that it was an inherent thing from the avot. To my understanding, like before Abraham and before, like, you know, he discovered Hashem and everything like that, everyone was more or less on the same level spiritually, same type of soul. But separated us from Goyim, let's say, is because of our avod, is the work that they did. Everyone, you know, Abraham with what he did, Yitzchak and Yaakov with what they did, they elevated their souls to a certain level, and now their descendants were Yorish at same level, more or less.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like an inherent thing that from the work that they did, now it's passed on to Jewish souls, which is what separates them from non-Jewish souls.
Yes, that's truly quite an amazing idea, that the Maisem of the Avos literally created a different soul structure. That's quite amazing. In other words, they literally changed the inner spiritual godly essence of the Jew. Okay, that's a chiddush, but yeah, that's probably what the...
I don't know if this was discussed in previous classes, I wasn't here past a couple of weeks, so forgive me if it was, but the whole concept of the right side of the heart, left side of the heart, is there any connection to, like let's say, the physical aspect of what each side does? Because, you know, I would think maybe it would be the opposite. The left side is what actually sustains the body, the right side is like the oxygenated blood that comes in from that side.
Well, he doesn't draw the correlation, but I think the correlation makes a lot of sense, because the function of the animal soul is to sustain the physical operations of the body, so it makes sense that would be the pumping system. But the oxygen, so to speak, the health, the vibrancy, would come from the right. Right, you see. So in a sense, the physicality corresponds to their spiritual functions.
Does it work both ways? Because we've talked about how Abraham, we inherit his spirituality, which is elevated.
Yeah.
Is that maybe why we have an obligation to kill Amalek? Not because their descendants will also get passed down bad spirituality, and it's within them too evil.
Well, yes, I mean, that would be basically it. Now, of course,
they inherit wickedness and evil from
their ancestors. Yes, they do. They do. Now, the question becomes philosophically, is there such a thing as something that is such an absolute evil that it's not capable of redemption? Meaning, are we saying Amalek is such inherits this evil in their soul that is simply incapable of being elevated, incapable of being redeemed? So there already you get into difficult questions. But I will say that according to the Rambam, it's interesting. People don't realize this Rambam. The Rambam says even Amalek, as bad as they are, if they accept the seven commandments of Noach and the Jewish sovereignty over Eretz Yisrael, you are allowed to let them live. Even Amalek. So according to the Rambam, the whole parsha of Mechias Amalek is not as absolute as you otherwise would think. I don't know if you ever read this. This is a Raoul Dahl, D-A-H-L. He was a writer. I don't think he's alive anymore. He wrote the children's books and adult books. Very, very good writer. So he has a story. He has an allegory, which is actually very, very telling about a mullet. He writes about a little baby, a beautiful little baby, whose mother loved him dearly, and the baby was seized with an awful, awful illness, and he was coughing and sneezing and really on the verge of death. And the doctor came, and the mother was so grateful that the doctor could give life. She said how much she loves her child and how much this is her world, and without him, you know, her life would be gone, and please, 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 you know, help my little baby to live. And he portrays it in a very emotional way. So Raoul Dahl ends the story. Imagine in a moment of clarity you saw that this baby was Adolf Hitler, and you knew he would grow up and he would kill 6 million Jews and millions of other people. What? But now you see a cute little baby who is suffering so much and the mother loves him so much. What is the merciful and compassionate thing to do? To take a knife and just, you know, kill? So Dahl was making the point that sometimes, you know, what we think is the short-term mercy, you never know. Now, when it comes to stamazai, you know, I want to go around killing people because maybe they're going to produce rishayim. How do I know? Of course I can't make that judgment. But the one entity that can make that judgment is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when people say, you're killing a mullet, men, women, children, babies, what type of morality is that? The answer is, we're killing people who Hashem is telling us are going to grow up to be Hitlers. So we're killing them now. Only Hashem could say that. We couldn't say that. We could never say that.
Is there an idea that you can breed out this evil spirituality? Because I know with Egyptians, we say that it takes a third generation.
Yeah. So it depends on...
Moabites,
no. Well, the females are permitted, and the males are not. Well, but Amalek, you don't have such a rule. Although, again, once you go into the halachic shittas, you find very, very funny things. Like the Rambam, an Amalekite can live if he accepts the seven mitzvahs. According to other shittas, an Amalekite can convert to Judaism. And if they become Jewish, you can marry them. You may remember a Gemara in Gittin, maybe you've come across, but it depends on the Girsa. The Gemara discusses how sometimes the descendants of very evil people become righteous, they become gerim. So it actually mentions, B'nei Banav Shel Haman Limdu Torah Bivnei Barak. The grandchildren, or the, you know, the descendants of Haman, became teachers of Torah in Bnei Barak. Although Haman was killed and his 10 sons were killed, but apparently there were grandchildren who were not killed, and their descendants. Now, some Achronim ask Akasha, what are you talking about? You can be Makabel Gerim from Amalek. The Mechilta says you cannot be Makabel Gerim from Amalek. But other Shitas say you could. So that would suggest that it is possible for transformations to take place even in Amalek. Very difficult. By the way, I just mention an aside. Since we mentioned Amalek, I want to just tell you a famous, famous vort from Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. Very, very important thought to keep in mind. How was Amalek created? Amalek was created because there was an Egyptian princess whose name was Timna. She was a princess. She wanted to be Mistabekes. She wanted to connect to the family of Avram. They pushed her away and she said she was not worthy. So she went to Esav. She said, if I can't connect to the holy part of Avram, I want to connect to even the non-holy part. And she was going to marry Eliphaz, Esav's son, but Eliphaz wouldn't even marry her. So she became a concubine. She became a pilegesh. She became a mistress to Esav's son, even though she was a princess in Mitzrayim. And out of the relationship of Eliphaz and Timnah came Amalek. So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz used to say, Amaleks are created in the world when there is rejection. When a person is made to feel that they are worthless, that they are no good, they are not worthy, that's what happened to Timna, that produces the rage of Amalek. Now, keep in mind, that is not excusing the bad guy. That's not saying, oh, Hitler had a right to do what he did because people didn't treat him right when he was a painter in Vienna. you know, which actually was true. But obviously, many people suffer rejection and don't grow up to murder 6 million people. So we're not giving a heter, so God forbid, so to speak, for the rishus that a person does. But Rav Chaim says we do have to be makir that the rejection that we trigger can have devastating ripple effects. That is why his shita always was. He never kicked anybody out of Mir, even if somebody wasn't learning, etc. Unless they were actively a negative, poisonous hashpa, he said he's not going to make amalek. That's what he said. He's not going to tell a person, you're not good enough to be here, because this is a devastating impact. You know, I'll tell you two stories about the Chafetz Chaim. Again, it's a little yaitzeh from the Inyan, but it is kedai. Now, I'm not sure. I'm going to tell you two stories, but I'm not sure if they involve the same person or not. It's a little mud nizach. Story number one starts off with a rabbi in Florida. I think it may have been Rabbi Riskin, was giving a speech about a story he heard about the Chafetz Chaim, that once there was a boy that was Mechalel Shabbos, and the boy had to go to the Chafetz Chaim, and the boy spent 5 minutes with the Chafetz Chaim, and that changed the boy's life, and he became a tzaddik and a talmid chacham. And Rabbi Riskin said, if only I knew what the Chafetz Chaim said to change that boy's life, I would have the secret to motivation and kiruv. So at the back of the audience, this never happens to me, in the back of the audience, an old man with a walker, you know, gets up laboriously and says, you know, in his 90s, and he says, I am that man. And I'll tell you exactly what happened with the Chafetz Chaim. I was a 15-year-old kid. I was smoking. I mean, I it's not that I wasn't from, I was from, but I, you know, I was nichshel, I was smoking. And they told me you have to go to the Chafetz Chaim. And I was so scared. The Chafetz Chaim was not the Rosh Hashiva of Radin, but he was more than the Rosh Hashiva. He was like the whole. And I was shaking. I was quivering. It's funny. We're not so afraid of the Ribbono Shel Olam, but the Chafetz Chaim says, I was terrified. I was shaking. And finally, I go into the Chafetz Chaim. And the Chafetz Chaim was very short. The 15-year-old was taller than the Chafetz Chaim. But the Chafetz Chaim looks up, and these piercing blue eyes, you know, at the Chafetz Chaim. And then I see his eyes are filled with tears. And he takes my hand between his hands. But some of his tears first fell on my hand. And it was like a hot fire falling on my hand. And he looked at me and he only said two words. He only said, Shabbos, Shabbos. And I saw in his eyes, number one, the tremendous love he had for me, the tremendous pain that he had for me, that I was not following the Derech Hashem. And when I saw how much pain I was causing him, I realized how much pain I'm causing the Ribbono Shel Olam. And I said, I could never do this again. He says, I changed. He said, I changed. Because I felt his love for me, and I felt his love for Shabbos, and I felt his love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I felt the devastating pain I was causing because of his concern for me, and that changed me. Now that's story number one. Now story number two, and again, I'm not sure if it's part two of the same story, is also a kid who was Mechalel Shabbos, and he had to go to the Chafetz Chaim, and the Chafetz Chaim told him, you have to leave yeshiva. And as the boy was leaving, the Chafetz Chaim said, where are you going? And he said, the Rebbe said, I have to leave. He says, you have to leave the yeshiva, but you live in my house, and I'll learn with you, b'chavrusa. Meaning the Chafetz Chaim said, just because, you know, you're a negative hashpa on others, and therefore I have to be concerned about the others, doesn't mean I'm not concerned for you. You're a yid too. I'll be mechazik you. I'll work with you. So I sometimes think, well, gee, isn't this what the Gemara calls chote nisker? The sinner gets a big profit. I mean, all the good guys that are learning Yom V'Laila, they don't get a chavrusa with the Chafetz Chaim. And this guy's Mechalel Shabbos, he gets a private seder with the Chafetz Chaim. But I think the answer is, learning with the Chafetz Chaim would not be such an easy experience. You know, gotta come on time, no batala, no lashon hara. You know, it's not like, you know, I have a status chavrusa, I learn with the Chafetz Chaim. It wouldn't be as easy and even as pleasurable necessarily as it sounds. But this was an amazing day. There was a video with Rav Steinman, Zichrono Livracha. I have a feeling, well, I wasn't staged with Rav Steinman, but I have a feeling that the people who were talking to Rosh Diamond perhaps were acting out something. They wanted to get a certain reaction. They said that they were the head of a Maisa. They were head of the Yeshiva Katana. And there was an almana who wanted her child to go to this Yeshiva Katana. And these heads are presenting to Rav Steinman that this is a Yeshiva Katana filled with children of Avreichem, very chashuv Avreichem, and they felt the almana was a little too modern, and her child really doesn't belong in the school because it's a little modern, a little less from than everybody else. And Rav Steinman, who was the kindest and gentlest of all people, really got very, very upset. He was really agitated. And he said, this is gaiva, arrogance, that they can't be with people who are not their kind. And the Rosh Mechina kept on saying, well, these are chashuva people. He says, I don't care, gaiva. He said over and over, gaiva. So at the end, when they were walking away, he said, you know, they basically said, we can't accept him or something. So they're walking away, he said, what's the boy's name? So they said, no, we don't know. So Steinman says, so you kick somebody out of your maisa and you don't daven for them? You don't even know the name that you could daven for them? So let's say somebody can't go into your school. That means they're garbage? That means they're nothing? Or that means you're mispalo for them, that they should find a place? That's a tremendous, tremendous musser. You know, I know places where sometimes yeshivas for kids at risk and the troubled adolescents, where sometimes people have crossed so many boundaries that the maisid cannot keep them anymore. But I know that the Rosh Yeshiva sat down with the boys and said, this is our fault, this is not your fault. It's our fault that we could not create the framework that would help you, and we're going to try to find a place and a situation that will help you. Don't look at it as your failure, it is our failure. That's really a great thought here. How did I get onto this? I don't know, but I don't even remember. But okay. All right, but this is the two levels of that. Now, at the end, though, I want to read you another line from the end of Perek Tetzvav, which, if you just read this Perek, would be absolutely mysterious. But I see in the next Perek, he actually is Masberit. This is when he talks about why the 101st time is Avaida, because you're going beyond your Regilus. Lachain, this is the end of Perek Tetzvav. Zos hapam hameya viyachas hayisera al haRegilus. The 101st time, which is one more than habit, shehurgal minu'urav, which you got used to as from your youth, shekula keneged kulam, it is worth all of the 100, v'yayla al gabeyam, it is above all of them, v'yeser se'es v'yeser o's, and that, lios nikra, oved alokim, and that gives you the title within the category of Beinoni, of being the oved alokim, mipnei shekedei l'shanos teva haregilus, in order to change the nature of what I am accustomed to. So now he says, like following, Tzorech la'orer es ha'ava la'shem al yedei shemisponein b'gedulas Hashem b'mocho. You have to awaken, not just the hidden love that is always there, subconsciously, but you have to consciously awaken your love for Hashem by contemplating His greatness, and that will give you the koach to rule over your teva, which is on the left side, which is filled with the blood of the animal soul, etc. And that is called Avoda Tama. That is called the perfect Avoda of a Beinoni. But then he says, oh, or La'orer es Ava HaMustera Shebelibo, or you can awaken the hidden love in your heart to rule over your Teva, which is also called an Avoda. Ma She'en Ken She'en Lo Milchama Klal, when there's no war at all, that is not, that Ava is not called Avoda at all. Which means the Baal HaTanya is making three statements. That which I simply do because of the hidden love of my heart, and there's no contravening ra that's pushing me the other way, that's bechlal not called an avaida. So he suggests that a beinoni accomplishes avaida in two ways, but here it's a very, very big kitzer. One is to be ma'orer his ava by bisponein in the greatness of Hashem, and the other is to arouse the hidden love. Now what's that? If I just act because of the hidden love, that's not avaida. But now there's something called arousing the hidden love. These are two things. But again, it doesn't make sense. So now, to understand this, we now have to look at the next perek, and this will become a little clear. In Perek Yud Zayin, I'm sorry, Perek Tes Zayin, chapter 16, the Baal HaTanya lays down what he calls two klalim, two general rules for a Beinoni that is nichlal in avodas Hashem. Okay, so again, so now you're subdividing the category of oved Elokim. There is the Beinoni that's not oved Elokim, still a good righteous person, and that's the person who simply doesn't have a yetzer hara lioso davar or hergel nasa teva. That's the low oved Elokim. The oved Elokim is the one that has to be misgaber over Ra. Okay? That's the Oved Elokim. So now, though, we are further subdividing. There are two ways he could do this. The highest and the best way, which will not work for everybody, is that the Moach, the brain, contemplates the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and through that contemplation, he is inspired with a spirit of Das and Yiras Hashem, and the Yiras Hashem keeps him away from every negative commandment and even an Isur Drabana, and Avas Hashem in his heart, which will be aroused with Chashika V'Chafitza. Chashika V'Chafitza means yearning and desire. Now again, he hasn't become a tzaddik because it hasn't overflowed into the left ventricle. But at least in the right, he is filled with a passionate love of God. Now again, this is not the Abba Mesuteris. This is not the hidden love. This is considered to be Hiskalos Liba. Right? That's the language. Hiskalos Liba means a conscious, overpowering love of God that maybe has not yet vanquished the evil on the other side, but it is the motivator to serve God, and it is the engine which will allow me to fight back any yetzer hara that's pulling me down. This is called the al yidei hisbonenus, the hisorerus of the ava bihisgalus libo, in a conscious, overpowering, passionate love. Again, the Alter Rebbe was of the Shita. Now, this may be something that we've almost never experienced, that intellectual contemplation of the greatness and glory of God, starting from the Moach, can arouse within the heart a passionate love for God in the right ventricle. And even if that's not yet the tzaddik that will destroy that evil, it'll give him the koach to prevent that evil from going to the ear katana, and he'll be in full control. But then the Alter Rebbe says, not everybody is going to be able to achieve that. Not everybody is going to achieve a passionate, overpowering love of Hashem, and it's that love that pushes me forward to do the mitzvahs. So now the Rebbe says there is a different type of love that is connected to the hidden love. But it's not simply the hidden love acting as an inertial force, but it's actually something you are doing with the hidden love. And that is, this is a love that is said to be bitalumos libo. It is in the depths of his heart. Meaning it's not behiskalos libo, meaning it's not consciously felt, and it's connected to the concealed love, but it also is triggered by hisbonenus, and that is what we might say is that through hisbonenus, I emotionally feel that this is what I would want to be. There's a difference between being something and wanting to be something. Being something is when you're actually consumed with Avas Hashem. That, the Alter Rebbe says, may not be a madrega that everybody could have. But there's another type of emotional feeling of the heart, and that is when I contemplate God's greatness and I take it seriously, eventually what it can do is it moves from my mind to my heart, so that I have a yearning that I wish I could be that type of person. So that type of emotional feeling would involve things like commitment, steadfastness, loyalty, a desire to desire, even if I'm not quite there. And that too is an ava. That's more of a concealed ava. But what you're doing is you're using the moach to cause your heart to at least feel, I wish I could have this open love for God. And the Bala Tanya says, under those circumstances, that is also called an avoda tamima. That is called, although it's of a secondary nature, it is not the highest level of the Beinoni. So even within the Beinoni, there are madregas. So we have three madregas of the Beinoni. Right? The Beinoni already is a person who doesn't sin with machshava dibur maisa. That's already a given. But there is the Beinoni that's not an Oved Elokim, because he's acting without a Yetzer Hara against him, and that's he's simply being pushed by the Ava Mesuteres Shebalibai, without any work on his part. So he's not an Oved. He's a good person, but he's not an Oved. He's not working. Or Hergo Nasateva. The second type is the person who, through his boneness of the Moach, feels an emotional connection in his heart that I want to be loyal to Hashem, and I want to love Hashem, and I want to be connected to Hashem. And that is called the Ava that comes bitalumos libo, in the hidden recesses of his heart. So that's a little different than Ava Mesuteret. The Alter Rebbe uses slightly different terminologies. The Ava Mesuteret is purely instinctual. That's there. This is something that comes from your avoda of hisboninus. And then you have the highest level of the Beinoni, which could lead him to a tzaddik, theoretically. And that is, the Ava in the Chalol HaYamini is like Rishvei Esh. It is like a fire, an all-consuming love. The only reason you're not a tzaddik is it hasn't spilled over to vanquish the Ra, but at least within the Chalol HaYamini, it is a true, true passion. And the Alter Rebbe says that even the middle level, where the Ava is not yet Kirish Ve'esh, it is not like the fire of I love God, but it's more of the quiet idea. I know this is important. I wish I could be the person that loved God. That is also an Ava of the heart. That is an Ava of the Beinoni. So one is called Ava Behisgalus Libo, and the other is called Ava Bitalumos Libo, but that is slightly different than the Ava Mesuteres. Did you want to say anything?
Yeah. Are we saying this middle Darya can lead a person to that higher Darya? Are we saying it's a different Avoda?
It seems to be a different Avoda, but the point basically is, though, that since doing Torah and Mitzvahs always connect me to Hashem, so as I get more connected to Hashem, my Madregas can change also. My ability to connect becomes enhanced. Yeah.
By doing either of these options, does that influence the other side of the heart to become the same as
it seems that the only thing that could would only be the highest option, because once you've reached a level, it's like a fire. Once you have a fire, the fire can spread. Right? So the fire is literally the description of that highest level. It's the highest level that might be the transition to a tzaddik, possibly.
Is that through, let's say, a person channels something that he likes to do that's not necessarily kosher, but he channels it through a kosher way. Is that a way of taking the fire and channeling?
Well, I think Dr. Rebbe would say that that's a way of taking a lavush, taking the garment of action, and turning it into a highway. But that does not automatically change the quality of the soul itself. Say again?
Did that be called a tzaddik she'ein gemara?
Well, lav davka. Even a beinoni is supposed to do that, right? A beinoni is supposed to, in his actions, supposed to do everything in a good, direct everything in a good way. Okay, so this is a very, very subtle issue, but the critical point is something that's relatively graspable, and that is that love of God is manifest on many, many levels. There is the passionate, actual love that you have for God. And then there is the yearning to be a person that would have that quality. And the Bala Tanya says, the yearning to have that quality itself is an expression of a form of love. The fact that you wish you would feel a passionate love for God is an expression of a love that you have for God. And he points out the following. He points out that this is, he gives a beautiful explanation, again, a big chiddush, and I'm not sure if it fits the context of the Gemara. There's a famous Gemara that says, everyone knows this Gemara, Machshava Tova HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mitzaref Lamasa. That means a good thought, God treats it as if it was a good action. So the simple meaning is, if I thought to do a mitzvah but I was not able to do it, Hashem gives me credit. If, on the other hand, I thought to do an avera and I didn't do it, I'm not going to be responsible, right? The machshava tova is like a maisa. In fact, Lavush explains, this is a very interesting thing, Lavush explains, halachically, this explains the halachas of Kedusha. Let's say you're davening Shemona Esrei, and the chazan is up to Kedusha. So what do you do when the chazan is up to Kedusha? You're not allowed to answer because that's a hefsek in Shemona Esrei. So what do? You remain silent. You have kavana to be yotze with the words that he's saying. And under the principle of shamea ka'ona, listening with kavana to be yotze is as if you said it, you have the mitzvah of Kedusha. So frek levush mimanefshach. If I say shamea ka'ona, if I say listening to somebody doing it for me is as if I said it, then it should be a hefsek. So mimanefshach. Elamai, it's not like I said it, then I'm not yotze. So how does it work? How can it be Shemea Ka'ina Yoyaitzei and it's not a Hepsik? Says the Levush. Machshava Tova is called a Maisa. Machshava Ra is not called a Maisa. Therefore, Legabe, being Yoyaitzei a mitzvah, Hashem treats my Machshava as if I did. But to treat it as an Avera, being Mafsik, the Machshava is not treated like that. Okay, the Maisa, it's a very shver Levush because here you're dealing with the same thing, to say Palgina, we can split it, that Legabi the mitzvah, it's a mitzvah, Legabi the Avera, it's not an Avera, okay, it's a problematical application, but nevertheless, this is the conventional understanding that Hashem looks at a good thought as if it is a good deed. Yeah.
So, how would Rabbi Niona understand that Gemara, because I think Ashari Chuba, he writes that if you wanted to do a sin, and for whatever reason you were stopped, it's considered like you did.
Well, that'd be fair. I have to look at that passage. Now, I will tell you, there is one exception. Let me give you one Gemara, which Rabbeinu Yaina does bring. I'm thinking of is exactly what you're talking about. The Gemara says like this. If you remember, the Gemara the Chumash in Parshas Matos says if a woman makes a vow, a neder, her husband, under some circumstances, can annul the vow. So let's say she makes a neder, she's not going to eat chocolate. The husband, on the day that he hears of the neder, can annul it. He can simply declare the neder is void. And then the Torah says, and therefore, if she violates the vow afterwards, God will forgive her. So the Gemara asks the obvious question. What do you mean God will forgive her? If she eats chocolate after the husband was made for the neder, there's no avera at all. Right? What does she need forgiveness? So the Gemara says the case would be she thought there was still a vow. She intended to do an Aveira. It turned out it wasn't an Aveira, but since she intended to do an Aveira, it's sinful. And the Gemara says, we see from here, that if I pick up a piece of meat, and I think it's treif, and I want to eat treif, but Nebuch, Baruch Hashem, it winds up to be kosher, I still have a sin, because I intended to go against Hashem. Now the question becomes, I think that may be what Rabbeinu Yonah is talking about. The question becomes, but the Gemara says Beferish not that way. The Gemara says if you thought to do a sin and you didn't do it, it's not counted as a sin. So the chiluk they give is this: there I did carry out my evil thought by an action. The action happened not to have been sinful, but I took my thought all the way to the end. That's different than I wanted to eat treif, but I didn't even get a piece of meat in my hand. So there'd be a difference between I want to eat treif, but all the restaurants are closed, versus I want to eat treif, but I accidentally bought a kosher sandwich. Because when I accidentally bought a kosher sandwich, I did carry out my thoughts going so far as an action. And that would be an aveira, Masha Einken. So I'll check if Rabbeinu is talking about that. But
I think the way he mentioned it there was... And that differentiation wouldn't necessarily work with the way you said it, because I think I have to look it up exactly.
Yeah,
also.
Okay.
But I think the way you said it is like, let's say you were about to do it, and someone comes into the room, so now you're embarrassed to do it, and you don't do it.
So that's interesting. So I have to look at that, because the chayra, that does contradict the Gemara's statement. But be it as it may, the Baal HaTanya offers a 180 degree, totally different interpretation of this statement. Because Hitainas, if you interpret, again, what's the language? Machshava tova HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitzaref l'maisa. Now, mitzaref normally means he combines it to an action. That implies there is an act. When you combine something, that implies there is an action and there is a machshava, and God is combining it. If the statement means Hashem counts my machshava as if there was an action, you wouldn't use the word mitzaref. You would simply say, Maila alaf hakasav, HaKadosh Baruch Hu considers it ki'ilu, as if you did it.
So the Gemara must be proving mirror neurons.
Say again?
The Gemara must be proving mirror neurons.
Who's wrong?
Mirror neurons.
Oh, okay, alright. So here's what the Baal HaTanya says. Mitzaref refers to this idea. I do an action. The Zohar says the following lashon. The Zohar says, Dechilu urechimu. This is Aramaic. Dechilu is reverence of God. Yiras Hashem. Rechimu is love of Hashem. There's a beautiful passage of the Zohar. Dechilu urechimu are trei gadfin. Again, all of this Aramaic. They are two wings that bring your mitzvos up to Hashem. Dechilu urechimu. Bring your mitzvos to Hashem. Right? Without them, your mitzvos lack chios. They lack life. Or sometimes the lashon that's used, the Baal HaTanya uses this as well, muchin. Dechilu urechimu are the muchin. They are the brains. They are the activating force that bring your mitzvos to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But says the Baal HaTanya, I might have had a hava amina, that it's only a dechilu urechimu bihiskalos libo, in which you actually have the love and the yira. But if all you have is machshava tova, what's machshava tova? The wish that I had the ava v'yira, right? The second level. But I don't actually have it. Maybe that wouldn't bring my mitzvahs up to shemayim. So when it says machshava tova, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, look, it's a very mamish and ingenious interpretation. Machshava Toiva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mitzaref L'maisa, he takes your Machshava Toiva, your wish that you could love God, and he allows that koach to be the animating force that brings your Maisim to Shemayim. Mitzaref L'maisa, he combines it to your action, and that becomes the muchin, that becomes the trei gadfin, that becomes the two wings. Again, we move back and forth between either calling it two wings, or we call it muchin v'chiyus, the brains and the life force. And now I have to go back. If I remember, I don't think it literally fits the context in which the Gemara uses this klal. But still, just as a separate statement, it's a quite beautiful statement, and it reminds us that there's a statement of Chazal, a well-known statement: "Ein dover omeid b'fnei haratzon." Nothing can stop will. Will, ratzon, overpowers everything. So people ask the obvious question: what do you mean it overpowers everything? If I'm standing in front of a brick wall or an iron wall, and I say, I want this wall to fall down, you know, it's not going to happen. Plenty of things stop Ratzon. So you know what the Sfas Emes says? Beautiful. The Sfas Emes says, it doesn't mean nothing can stop Ratzon. It means nothing can stop you from having the Ratzon. Meaning, yeah, maybe the wall will block me, but that doesn't stop me from having the Ratzon. In the Baal HaTan, you can have the Ratzon. The Ratzon may or may not work, but there's nothing that stops you from having the Ratzon. So this is what the Baal HaTanya says. Maybe you're not going to be a person, we're not going to be a person, that through his bonanus will have a total arousal of avas Hashem b'hiskalus libay. But l'chol apachas, and he considers, now even this is a madrega, he considers this to be easy, basic, and something that will happen, everybody can do. You at least have the feeling of talumas libay. I want to be a person who loves God. I want to be a person that's loyal to God. I want to be a person who has the desire to serve God, even if at this moment I don't automatically have that desire. And this is the Avayda Tama Vabainani. This becomes the Trei Gadfin, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mitztarech Machshav L'Maisa. And in Perek Yudches, Yudzayin, he makes the point, we now understand, going back to our original pasuk, Ki karov eilecha hadavar miyayid, the Torah, this is in Parshas Nitzavim, Ki karov eilecha hadavar miyayid, the Torah is so near to you, bepicha, in your mouth, uvilvavcha, in your heart, lasosa, which implies that it's not only the doing of the Torah, but even in your heart, it's easy. What do you mean it's easy? It's certainly not easy to be a tzaddik, so to speak, or that's not a guaranteed. And even if you're going to talk about, we're only talking about the right part of the heart, to be ma'orer ava, that's not a madrega everybody can do. But what is easy? Because since it says bepicha uvilvavcha la'asoso, so we're talking about la'asoso, to do, what is the arousal of the heart that will lead to action? That is this level of loyalty and wanting to love God. That will lead la'asoso, right? Because that will allow you to dominate the teva and the ra of the cholol hasmali, so that the ir ketana will be, you know, the guf, the day of the machshava, the dibur and the maisa, will all be controlled by the Yetzer Tov. And this, he says, is ultimately something that every single person can reach. He then goes into, I'll leave this for next week, he then goes into extreme Rishayim, which he doesn't mean his definition of Rasha, in which extreme Rishayim may not be able to even do that until they go through an Avodah of Tshuva. But for us, even when we fail, and you know, at 10 o'clock we're Rishayim, but it is within our koach to become Beinonim through this type of Hisairus. So what we have is we subdivide Beinoni into the one that's not Oveid and the one that is Oveid, and then within the Oveid category we have those that are Ma'orer the Ava b'Hiskalos Libo and those that are Ma'orer the Ava b'Talumos Libo. And one is referring to the actual experience of passionate love, and the other is referring to the wish and the desire that you could have such a love. And the passionate love automatically brings your mitzvahs up to Hashem. The other type of love is HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mitzareif Machshava Tova L'maisa, so it'll do the same thing. Now, I just want to mention one thing that I've mentioned a number of times before, that the Sefer Nefesh HaChayim, Rav Chaim Volozhiner's Sefer, was written very, very shortly after the Tanya was published. And there are kind of a kamarayas that Rav Chaim Volozhiner either read Tanya or at least was aware of what the Tanya talked about, because there are many times, although he does not mention the Sefer, there are many, many times that he is writing in parallel, often in agreement, mamish in agreement, and sometimes in disagreement, although he does not mention the Bala Tanya per se. That many say that it's kedai to, I happen to be doing this now because I have another share, but it's kedai to learn Tanya and Nefesh HaChayim together. Although, because they have different orders, it's a little confusing, because they don't talk about the same things at the same time. But B'sach HaKol, they talk about many of the same things. And one of the Yesaitis that Rav Chaim and what's interesting is that Rav Chaim Volozhiner B'davka uses Kabbalah. In fact, his main makor in everything is the Zohar. I mean, the amount of times he quotes passages from the Zohar is probably 200 times in the Sefer. Just Zohar, much more than the Gemara, much more than other things. And part of it is because since the Tanya was miyusad on Kabbalah, he needed to show that the Lifrisha Mahalach is also miyusad on Kabbalah. He had to use the very sources that the other side was using. And one of the major chilukim, but it's not really a machlokis, it's a question of emphasis, is that the Bala Tanya's statement from the Zohar Taka, that the chilu urechimu, love and fear, which means reverence, are the two wings that bring your mitzvahs to Shemayim, creates a certain implication that if you don't have that, if you're simply, let's say you're doing the mitzvahs out of the Ava Mesuteret Belev and you're not an Oved Elokim, the implication is your mitzvahs are simply on the ground and they don't go anywhere. And Rav Chaim Volozhiner went to great lengths to show that although Kavana is a wonderful, wonderful thing, one has to know that all of the tikkunim of the olamos come from the maisa mitzvah bifnei atzma. And the reason why Rav Chaim wanted to emphasize this is that in the beautiful teaching of the Zohar that the Bala Tanya emphasizes, there is a potential sakana, which chas v'shalom, the Bala Tanya was never nichshal in, but some chassidim were. And that is, if the ikar of a mitzvah is the love and the fear and the emotion, so a person might say, it's not so important that I have to keep all of the little pratim. I mean, let's say Zman Kriya Shema. Right? I'll give you an example. So Zman Kriya Shema today is what, 8 to 10? I don't know exactly. It's around 8, 10 or 8, 15. Let's say I'm real, real tired. And I could figure if I sleep another hour, I will have a gevaldige Kriya Shema, so much kavana. So tell me, what's better? For me to get up and say Kriya Shema before 8:15 when I'm dead tired? I'm not even thinking what I'm saying? Or to do a gevaldige, you know, Kriya Shema? So the problem is, the philosophy that is espoused here, although Chas V'Shalom, the Baal Tanya wrote a Shulchan Aruch, the Baal Tanya was a great, great medaktik in halacha and a great paisek. But the emphasis on subjectivity and emotion could lead a person to be mezalzel in the prate pratim of halacha. So Rav Chaim Volozhiner B'davka had to write that it's the pratim of the halacha that create the dveikus to Hashem rather than the inner emotional state.
What about Zman Tefillah today?
What about the what?
What about Zman Tefillah?
Yeah, same thing. What, you ask me why Hasidim Dab?
I'm asking why is it at 12 o'clock Quinyin in Satmar
and Sabadell? I'm not going to defend it. I mean, Rav Chaim Volozhiner was attacking that. That's what he was attacking all the way back.
Then. The Tanya essentially tried to protect against it as well.
Well, yes, the Bala Tanya, listen, Shulchan Aruch HaRav, the Bala Tanya wrote a Shulchan Aruch, and Shulchan Aruch HaRav, there's Hilchos Tefillah. Hilchos Tefillah says, you got to daven Shmoneh Esrei before Chatzos. I mean, it's there. That's Tefillah. No, that's Tefillah. And Zman Kriya Shema is Begimel Shai.
Zman Kriya Shema is 8:45, so you can do both.
Yeah, okay. Baal Tanya is the same sheet as the ground,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So that's the thing.
Wait, so Chatzis before Chatzis could be the Baal
Tanya? Yeah, of course. Of course. I mean, the latest. I mean, it's Dalet Shais, but B'dievet, it's Chatzis. So
is there any machlekes in this in terms of what's more important, the Maisa Mitzvah or the...
So I was going to say that Be'ikr, there's not really a machlekes. The emes is, it's Eilavel, Jibreel, Kim Chayim. And what happens in Klal Yisrael is that when certain inyanim are neglected, so they need to be nischazik. So the Baal HaTanya gave us the chizuk l'gabi the kavana, and the Nefesh HaChaim gave us the chizuk l'gabi the maisa. You need both. You need both. It can't be an either or. You know, Rav Chaim V'Leshner gives a mashal, actually, that let's say a person would want to make a Pesach Seder when it wasn't Pesach, because he could do so with more Yishuv Hadas. But it would be a galechter, it would be a mockery. You're serving Hashem by doing a Pesach Seder like now. So, I want to tell you something. I once gave this mashal. I was giving a share to a non-religious group, and it was a women's share. So a woman actually said, "Oh yeah, that's exactly what we did. We figured we couldn't get the family together for Pesach. So we decided we'll make our Seder a week after Pesach." I said, "It was a wonderful Seder." You know, so I tell you, so this is the idea of subjectivity going to the furthest extreme. So this would be an akuda. I don't want to call it a machlekes, really. It's not a machlekes, but it's a very, very different emphasis that the Baal HaTanya threw out. In fact, even the Avodah of the Beinoni, I mean, you'll notice that the Baal HaTanya could have just said the Beinoni is the person who keeps all the halachas. He does not sin with machshava even, dibur maisa. But instead, it's always defined in terms of the hisairus of the ava and the yira of the heart. And then he gives you two ways that you have that hisairus. One is b'hiskalos libay, and one is b'talumais libay. But that's the definer. The real definer of the Beinoni is the hisairus of the Ava in his heart in one of these two ways. So that could be a nekuda that Rav Chaim V'Leshner might differ with. Tarei Lishma, the same thing. Tarei Lishma was a big one. We saw earlier in the Tanya that the Baal HaTanya defined Tarei Lishma as Tarei with the Kavana to be Mizdabek with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Nefesh HaChaim, Shar Dalet, the whole Shar is B'davka. That's not what Tarei Lishma means, and he felt a person shouldn't be thinking about that. That happens automatically. Tarei Lishma is you learn Tarei to understand Tarei. That's Tarei Lishma. Lishma. Actually, grammatically, Rav Chaim has the better. Lishma is feminine. Right, so to translate Taira Lishma, meaning I learned Taira for the sake of a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you would not say Lishma, maybe you would say Lishmo, b'derech klal, unless you're going to say the Shekhinah is feminine. That might be. So Rav Chaim learns Lishma is Lishem HaTorah, that I should understand the Taira. The Baal HaTanya says no. Lishma is to have devekus b'Hakadosh Baruch Hu. But as I say, even Nefesh HaChaim says that Torah ultimately gives you devekus b'Hakadosh Baruch Hu. He's not disparaging it. He just held you shouldn't be thinking about it consciously. And again, I would just add for a very practical reason that Rav Chaim held, if you think about Torah too much consciously as a mechanism of devekus, you're not going to have patience for a lot of things you're learning. When you're learning a Ketzais, you're learning a Mishnah L'Melech, you're learning very, very technical things. You know, you're going to ask yourself, gee, how does this make me Dovuk B'Hashem? So Rav Chaim says, don't think about it. It's what's happening, but if you think about it too much, you'll only want to learn those Chalakim of Torah that explicitly talk about ideas of Devekas, and that would cause you to neglect all of the other inyanim of Torah. So it's almost like a logistical thing, meaning the ultimate goal is the same like both, but the Baal HaTanya thought you should be more conscious of that goal. The Nefesh HaChaim felt, let it be in the background and don't be thinking about it so much. Yeah.
But The Rav mentions dvekus, something bringing me closer to Hashem. Are we discussing a feeling that I'm consciously aware of, or are we discussing an objective reality that I might not even know exists, but it's bringing me closer?
Well, it must be an objective reality, because Rav Chaim is saying that even if you don't think about it, you know, it's happening.
Is that what the Baal Tanya means also, when he says, I'm doing it to come close to Hashem?
Yes. Now again, a lot of the Tanya is trying to explain to you consciously what is happening. But the thing that's happening is not your consciousness. In other words, he wants you to be a little bit aware of what is going on in that Dvekas, but he's not saying your awareness is the Dvekas. See, okay.
So when we talk about Dvekas Hashem, it doesn't mean that I necessarily know, I don't feel close.
That's correct. It's your neshama is getting its light from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not through the klipa, etc. Okay, we'll stop here, Mr. Shem, and have a good week, everybody.
His insight begins this coming Monday night.
Wow.
The 24th of